This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The debate about spending on earmarks, better known as pork, is a hardy perennial in Congress. Budget hawks point to congressional vanity projects as symbols of government waste. Think of Senator Ted Stevens' so-called bridge to nowhere in Alaska last year. But earmarks get to the heart of how Congress conducts some of its business, as in, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And for all the hard-to-justify projects, many go toward serious public works, such as levee repairs in areas affected by Hurricane Katrina. And it's always easy to be critical of pork projects in somebody else's district. Voters tend to celebrate a politician who brings home the bacon. The House recently passed an ethics reform package that, among other things, requires lawmakers to be identified with their individual projects in an effort to increase transparency. In just a moment, we'll talk about whether that amounts to a substantive change and hear from members of Congress about the ongoing debate about earmarks. Later on in the program, the extraordinary letter from the President of Iran to the President of the United States. But first, pork. Is there a big federal project in your district? Do you want Congress to limit earmarks, even if that means losing that new post office or highway improvement? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. Joining us now is Jody Schneider, an economics and finance editor for Congressional Quarterly. She joins us here in Studio 3A. Very nice of you to come in today.
Good afternoon.
Has this debate about pork ever really changed?
Well, in some ways, as you note, it's a hardy perennial in Congress. One lawmaker's pork or earmark is another's constituent project. Mm-hmm. And for some, it's also things like funding for the levees or peacekeeping in Darfur, where we're talking about things that don't even necessarily affect your district as much as the common good, trying mm-hmm. to do, the work that you're sent to Congress to do, supposedly. But I think what has changed is the tenor of the debate this year, given the Jack Abramoff scandal and Duke Cunningham, and the attempt by more than just the House conservatives, who have long, the tape you played saying that, I love that phrase, this being the currency, earmarks being the currency of corruption, that has gone further into both parties, and people talking about earmarks now as being a real problem. That doesn't mean, at the same time, that they also don't want their own earmarks. But I think there are more calls, there's more culture in Congress right now to try to do something or to look like they're doing something about runaway earmarks.
Mm-hmm. And basically, define for us what we're talking about. What distinguishes an earmark from a regular piece of legislation?
They are often amendments that are added to spending bills for specific amounts for specific projects that were not in the spending bills that came out of the regular appropriations process, i.e. the president presents his budget to Congress, then they go ahead and they come up with their allocations in each of the spending bills in the 11 spending committees in one chamber and 12 in the other. Mm-hmm. These are things that get attached to that. There can also be earmarks in tax and authorizing legislation. The headline-grabbing so-called bridge to nowhere was in authorizing legislation. It was not in an appropriations bill. And that has become part of the debate about doing something about them. In the Senate, their lobbying overhaul bill, which includes earmark overhaul, would require that identification of earmarks not only be in appropriations and spending bills, but in authorizing and tax legislation as well.
And the current debate is over a bill in the United States Senate. This is a must-pass legislation providing emergency funding for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, more money for Katrina victims. And that's $94 billion is what the president wanted. The Senate has added $12 billion in other items, so-called earmarks that, as you say, weren't debated in committee, aren't being voted up and down on their own merits.
That's right. Yeah, the president actually started off with about a $92 billion request. Then he said he would allow for there to be flu money of the $2.5 billion. And that will, of course, then he has a veto threat, which sounds to many of us like a real veto threat if it goes beyond the 94.5. The House passed a 91.5 $9 billion bill. And the Senate, as you point out, just ballooned and ballooned and ballooned to $109 billion. So they have about $16 to $18 billion difference between the House and the Senate and the Senate and what the president says he would accept.
And they're trying to hammer out a compromise version in a so-called reconciliation committee between the House version and the Senate version. And we'll have to see whether that what goes to the White House and whether if it's over $94 billion, whether the president will, in fact, carry out his threat to veto it. He has never vetoed a bill yet, and this would be the first one in what, almost 6 years of being in office. And you have to point out, this does come as we're in the run-up to midterm elections.
Right. Now, the elections play into this. That cuts both ways. On the one hand, there is this concern about the culture of corruption, and I think everybody wants to look like they're coming up with ways to play fair, that their constituents think they're playing fair. On the other hand, one of the few things that you can do, that you can show, in especially if you're in a very tight race, which many incumbent politicians are this year, is to show that you are doing something for your home district. And as I say, one person's earmark is another person's constituent service. And this bill, the supplemental spending bill, is going to be one of the few appropriations bills that's going to be passed before the November elections. A lot of them are going to the regular appropriations bills, are probably not going to be passed before the election. They'll probably come back and do those in a lame duck session.
800-989-8255 if you'd like to join the conversation. 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And let's try Beth. Beth calling from Vienna, Virginia.
Hi. I just wanted to ask a question. You just mentioned this being an election year. There is always discussion of campaign finance reform, and with the earmark issue coming up, particularly now, do you feel like this is something that's going to vanish after the elections, or if it's something that is going to stick and the Congress will do something about it at this point?
What do you think, Beth?
Oh,
Jody, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I got my caller and my guest confused. I apologize.
I think you're right. I think implicit in your question is, you know, once the heat is off the election, do they go back to regular business? And I think in some ways they're going to be having regular business this year. We just heard the other day that there were 2,700 earmark requests to Pete Domenici, the chairman of the Senate Energy and Water Appropriations Subcommittee. So even as lawmakers are saying that they want some kind of earmark overhaul, they're running up and putting in their requests for earmarks. So I think it will be very, very much business as usual, even throughout this process, but certainly once the election is over.
Thanks, Beth.
Yep.
And one other item about politics. Sometimes earmarks provide an opportunity to do something about an issue that is not going to be done with in any other way. This Senate bill, for example, allocates, I think, $2 billion to increased border security to give people an opportunity. See, I voted for increased border security, even though it now looks like an immigration bill may not get out of Congress.
Right. These are what we call, you know, kind of last train out of town bills, even though it's relatively early in the year. This is one of the few places that is going to be a magnet for putting on funding for all kinds of things, you know, peacekeeping Darfur, the border security, the levees in New Orleans, other kinds of things like that. So I think that that is part of what people are going to be, lawmakers are going to be running on in their campaigns as well.
Let's talk now with Sierra. Sierra calling us from Tallahassee.
Hi. Yeah, I was kind of curious as to why there isn't a absolutely huge push to make, I think they call them omnibus bills, illegal. You know, why not go to a one subject per bill that eliminates the need for a line item of veto? It makes it a heck of a lot more difficult to tack on crap that doesn't get, you know, actually looked at. And it would probably also make it a lot more difficult for the legislators to do this, you know, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine deal.
Mm-hmm.
It is, I mean, I know that the likelihood of a politician actually supporting that idea is pretty slim because it, you know, pretty much eliminates their business as usual, but you'd think there'd be some sort of grassroots effort from somewhere. I've been looking and I haven't found it.
Is there any kind of effort like this underway? I guess we'd have to ask the Senate and the House to change their rules.
Yeah, the omnibus, I assume when you say the omnibus, you mean end of the year, putting all these bills in a package because they haven't been able to complete
them. I mean any bill. I mean any bill, you know, when you pass a bill, it has to be about that one subject.
Or at least you could make a rule to say at least any amendments must be germane to the legislation.
Exactly.
If it's a defense bill, you can add a defense amendment, but you can't add a dam project in somewhere in the West.
Well, I've never understood why that's even allowed. You know, it doesn't make any sense.
Because they get to write up their own rules, isn't that
right,
Jody?
Right, especially in the Senate, which has arcane rules. Well, interestingly, the supplemental appropriations bill, the $109 billion passed by the Senate last week, they had actually filed cloture to cut off debate and require only germane amendments. And they still rang up the price of the thing because this is an emergency supplemental bill. And if they decided that it was at all an emergency, and emergencies can be broadly defined, mm-hmm. it was germane.
And that was the whole issue that Senator Coburn brought up about the amendment that the senators from Mississippi wanted to add to reroute the railroad line from New Orleans into Mississippi. And he said, well, this may be a fine idea, but is it an emergency?
Right. And that could be said for perhaps, I don't know, a great deal of what's in these bills. The other issue that's going on is, and the caller alludes to this, is that they are using things outside the regular process to go ahead and add on these earmarks. And they're budgeting much outside the regular budgeting and appropriations process, using the existence of the war and the need for emergency spending on the war to get through other things.
Sierra, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was curious. How many things that get tacked on to bills like this are really things that aren't sexy enough to get, you know, attention on their own and actually need to be done, as opposed to stuff that's good for the locals but not necessarily something that the rest of the country should be chipping in for? You know what I mean?
And that's kind of a matter of debate. I mean, that new post office could be, you know, is that something the country at large, you know, it depends where you live almost.
Right. It's very subjective. And if you look at, this was a big debate during, right after Katrina, not right after, but in some of these other bills, how much of this money did Louisiana need right away? How much of it was an emergency? That kind of thing. So I think it depends on where you sit with some of that.
Sierra, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're talking about the pros and cons of pork prep projects and extra spending that's added to some bills in Congress. Is it a problem? Is it business as usual? We're taking your calls at 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The Senate approved a $109 billion spending bill last week, most of it for the military in Iraq and Afghanistan and for hurricane relief, but it also includes a lot of money for so-called pet projects. Some members of Congress defend these so-called earmarks. Others say the spending has gone too far. Our guest is Jody Schneider, an economics and finance editor for Congressional Quarterly, who joins us here in Studio 3A. And, of course, you're invited to be with us as well. Do you have a big federal project in your district or an issue you care about that's been budgeted for in one of these bills? Should Congress limit earmarks, even if that means less money for your district? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. And the email address is talk@npr.org. We're going to hear from two members of Congress on this. And first, we turn to Congressman Michael Capuano, a Democrat from Massachusetts, co-chair of the Congressional Caucus on Sudan. He's proposed $50 million earmark to fund peacekeeping operations in Darfur. Congressman Capuano joins us by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Happy to do it.
And tell us why this money is important.
Well, the situation in Darfur is very difficult. We have literally hundreds of thousands of people whose lives are at stake, and the United States has, I believe, a moral obligation to continue to step up to the plate.
And what would this $50 million be used for?
This particular $50 million would be used to enhance the African Union military mission to protect the 2 million refugees that are currently living in very difficult situations in Sudan.
And we just saw an agreement reached the other day after long negotiations in Nigeria, and efforts are going to be stepped up. Of course, a long way between an agreement and actual improvement on the ground. But, Congressman, if this money is important, and a lot of people would say it is, why not introduce a piece of legislation, have the Foreign Affairs Committee debate it, put it out on the floor, vote it up or down?
I'm not on the right committee to do that. That's not the way the system works here. At the same time, whatever process is available to me, you know, on certain things like this, I will utilize. And I think that's exactly what we should be doing.
So any method necessary?
When it's the right thing to do, yes.
And when it's not the right thing to do, I mean, if you're going to ask other members of Congress to vote for your particular piece of legislation, might there be other pieces of legislation they want down the road that they would expect you to back?
Of course. This is a team effort. No one gets anything done alone. And on this particular piece of legislation, this particular addition, it was done on an up or down vote on the floor of the House. It wasn't just added to a bill that everybody had to accept if they wanted to vote for some other part of the bill, which I would argue is a better way to do it.
Mm-hmm. In this context, so you believe that at least the way that the House does business now, earmark legislation is a necessary evil? Is that the right way to phrase it?
Well, not necessarily. There are several different ways to get earmarks. The concept of earmarking doesn't bother me. I think that as an elected official, I have as much ability to know what's important for my district, or in this particular case for the United Nations or for the international aspect, as any other official, some appointed official that somebody may not know. I don't think that because I'm a member of Congress that I would give up or somehow walk away from my ability or responsibility to stand up on a particular issue.
Mm-hmm. Yet, in this case, there have been members of both parties who say the spending is running away. We've got to cap it.
That's a different issue. I mean, if people think we're spending too much, that is a completely separate issue. Earmarks come in the subcategory of once you decide how much spending you're going to have, how should it be allocated? So that they're really a distinction. To say that we're spending too much, that's a fair argument. I happen to agree with it. But at the same time, once we decide how much we're going to spend, there's still the question of earmarks, is where do we spend whatever it is we're going to spend?
Mm-hmm. And in the House legislation, the amount of money was at the president's request. It was at the budget level.
That's my understanding in general. But even then, I mean, the president is the president. He's not the king or the emperor. The president makes a suggestion. We agree with it sometimes. We don't agree with it sometimes. And that's the way the system has always worked, and I think it's the way it should work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to empower the president any more than he's already empowered.
I understand that, but at the same time, people wonder why can't the House revise its rules? You're not the king of the House of Representatives either, but why can't the House revise its rules so that these pieces of legislation get up or down votes?
I would have no problem with that. I personally have said right from day one, the concept of putting, for instance, an individual member's name next to every single earmark, I think is an excellent concept.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of making sure that they're done on the floor of the House or the floor of the Senate as opposed to in conference committee is an excellent proposal. But the concept of saying that a member of Congress in the House or the Senate should have absolutely no right and that all authority for determining specific spending should fall to the president or his administration, I think skews the balance of power.
Mm-hmm. And Congressman Capuano was making reference to the proposals, some of the proposals in the new ethics bill. And Jody Schneider, tell us a little bit more about that and where it stands now.
Well, that's another thing that is going to a conference committee. The Senate had passed a version, and the House last week passed a version very narrowly. They had to end up getting some Democratic support. But basically, both bills would make the procedures, the earmarking procedures, more transparent. They're going to require that earmarks and their sponsors be listed, be identified in all appropriations bills. And as I noted before, the Senate went a step further and required that earmark disclosure, that identification, be done in authorizing and tax legislation as well.
Mm-hmm. There is also a situation where some earmarks, and again, not Congressman Capuano's measure, but some earmarks are sort of thrown in at the last minute before anybody's really had a chance to even read them.
Right, and that's been a big objection, and also that they get done, that they're not done in, they're done in subcommittee, that they're not actually voted upon on the floor. The report comes, and you either vote the report up or down. Basically what some people are saying is this legislation is earmark light, that it's just really requiring identification and nothing more. But others say it's a start.
Mm-hmm. Identification, Congressman, is that the beginning of accountability?
I hope so. I've been here 8 years, and any of the earmarks I've ever gotten, I am more than happy and proud to put my name next to. I understand that some of my earmarks may not play well in a district that's 1,000 miles away. They don't understand what bridges need to be done or things like that. I understand that. Everybody has a different definition of the term. That's why I think the first thing, the most important thing to do, is to identify who's responsible for putting money into a budget.
And do you have an idea at this point where your $50 million for peacekeeping operations in Darfur, where that stands in terms of the reconciliation debate that's underway?
I understand that the Senate has included it in its bill as well, and the president's people have indicated that they now support it. so that that particular provision, in theory, is supposed to be supported by all three of the players.
Congressman, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for the time. Congressman Capuano, a Democrat from Massachusetts, he joined us today by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C. Let's see if we can get another listener on the line. And this is George. George with us from Loves Park, Illinois.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Go ahead.
I had a question. What happened to line item veto? Now, I think, you know, that would cause a lot of these bills that don't get passed because of some amendment that's been added to it would get passed, and then they could go back and amend it to the right of the right bill, like you were saying earlier.
Mm-hmm. President Reagan used to call for a line item veto every State of the Union address, like clockwork. It was finally approved by Congress, and then Jody Schneider struck down by the United States Supreme Court.
Right. Under Bill Clinton, it became law, and the Supreme Court said that it basically, it said it in a much more complicated fashion than this, but basically it unbalanced the balance of powers, that it gave the president too much authority in terms of that is supposed to be Congress's purview. There has been a proposal by President Bush, which has already begun being debated. They've had hearings on it so far. It's a bill that would allow what we're calling it line item rescission authority. Basically, it wouldn't be a veto, but that the president could identify particular appropriations earmarks or appropriations language and say that he wants to rescind it, to send it back to Congress. If Congress, then Congress would have a vote on that, and if they didn't get enough votes, it would be rescinded. It's not quite a veto, but and it looks like it has some legislative support. There was a hearing on it last week. They don't like the way it's written. They think it's actually a little too broad, that the president could hold things up a little too much. But it is being debated in the Congress.
And, of course, we still don't know what the courts would make of it. It would have to be approved by Congress and signed by the president and then tested in the courts. So that's a process that could take some time yet before we find out what happens to it. George, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Joining us now is Congressman Jeb Hensarling, a Republican from Texas, chairman of the Republican Study Committee's Task Force on Budget and Spending, a fiscally conservative group in the House. He joins us by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C., and thank you for joining us today.
I'm glad to be here.
The price tag of the emergency spending bill in the Senate keeps going up despite the president's protests about it. This is something that you and your associates have been deeply concerned about.
Well, obviously, I believe that spending is out of control. The federal budget is growing way beyond the ability of the family budget to pay for it, and I would be more than happy to send an ink cartridge to the president so he can put into his pen and veto it. I mean, right now, if we don't reform spending patterns in the federal city, we're on a very bad course to either, number one, double taxes on the next generation, or two, we're going to end up with no federal government, with the exception of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. There will be no Veterans Administration, no Homeland Security, nor Border Patrol unless we do something about spending growing twice the rate of the family budget. So, yes, I encourage the president to veto this bill and come up with something that American families can afford.
Are earmarks sometimes justified? We were just speaking with Congressman Capuano, who wants an earmark for funding for peacekeeping operations in Darfur, which is, he says, necessary, vital right now. Is that wrong?
Well, I'm not saying that all earmarks are bad, but just like the Surgeon General has said that perhaps for some people a glass of red wine a day can be healthy, I'm not sure he had that advice for winos. And I'm afraid that Congress has shown over the years that they can't use earmarks responsibly. So for every useful earmark, you also get a bridge to nowhere, you get a railroad to nowhere, and you get money for the water-free urinal conservation initiative. And as a colleague of mine, Senator Coburn of Oklahoma, has said, earmarks are the gateway drug to spending addiction. So clearly there are some good earmarks, and the proposal that we voted on in Congress, that I believe only a handful of Democrats voted for, would simply bring sunshine into the process. It would force this process out of the shadows. It would force it into the light of the day. It would mean that members of Congress would actually have to attach their name to what they're trying to do, and it would give the majority the ability to hold it up for challenge. And if we did, then perhaps in the future we would have fewer bridges to nowhere, and perhaps there might be more assistance to the great human tragedy taking place in Darfur.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the bridge to nowhere. I mentioned it before, too, because it was such a symbol in the last transportation bill. I guess it was last year. Senator Stevens was closely associated with that bill and never shied away from it, defended it vigorously, said it was important. And if anybody, you know, what makes his project any better or worse than anybody else's project?
Well, again, at a time where the national debt has gone from roughly $5.5 trillion to $8 trillion in just 10 years, at a time where we continue to have federal budget deficits, although they're coming down due to increased tax revenue, at a time when in the last 10 years the federal budget is growing 50% faster than the family budget, sooner or later you got to draw some priorities.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to conduct a war against terror, if we're going to try to relieve all the human suffering and rebuild the infrastructure along the Gulf Coast, perhaps now is not the time to be funding bridges to nowhere. I'm not sure there's ever a time to be building bridges to nowhere. That, and listen, again, there may be good earmarks, but some just don't pass the smell test. And that was one that clearly didn't pass the smell test, and I think if held up to a vote, the majority of members of Congress, if they knew about it, had a chance to debate it, would vote it down.
And are there any projects in your district that you've added in as earmarks?
Well, in 3 years, I've requested one earmark of concrete and asphalt for an interstate highway. So being one of the leading fiscal conservatives in Congress, they don't give me a lot of earmarks. And again, there have been some good ones, but I have also proposed a moratorium on earmarks, including any that I've requested, until such a time as we can balance the federal budget. It's a matter of priorities. I would be more than happy to give up any I have if the other members of Congress will give up theirs.
Congressman Hensarling, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Jeb Hensarling, a Republican from Texas's 5th District, a chairman of the Republican Study Committee's Budget and Spending Task Force, with us by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Jody Schneider, the Congressman Hensarling said something important. He said, they give me earmarks. These are, in some respects, favors doled out by committee chairman, are they not?
Right. And that is sort of the lubricant of this whole process. If you are on the good side of committee chairman, you get things. If you're on the bad side, you don't. That is why they have fought so hard, the appropriators, to not change the process, that you have seniority, you've done well, you should deserve things in return for your district, has long been part of the culture of Washington. And changing the earmark process in some ways is would change the whole culture of the Congress of the U.S.
A couple of emails. This from Linda in Midland, Texas. I'm working on an earmark project in West Texas. Our goal is to understand temperature at the bottom of gas or originally dry wells. We want to use the heat to generate electricity. The water in these wells is too salty for even reverse osmosis to clean up. By deep and hot, I mean 20,000 feet and 300 degrees or more. So that's what she's doing. This from Kent. It seems like some of this pork is what I'll call pseudo pork. Yes, it's been authorized, but for instance requires some local matching funds that will never appear. Thus, the federal budget shows the expense. The legislator gets the brownie points at home, but the money isn't actually spent. Is Kent right about that?
Yeah, he is. And there was some talk about that with the Katrina money early on, that they were going to send this to Louisiana, but no one knew when it was going to be spent.
Mm-hmm.
So I think part of the process is a lot of things that are done in Congress, including earmarks, are done so you can go home and you can run on the basis of that.
And let's see if we can squeeze in one more call. Bob. Bob's with us from Boulder, Colorado.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I can't imagine that there's an incentive within Washington to change the culture, and I think but there is no popular, outcry against this. And my thought would be, I don't think that people really understand the dollar value to them as citizens. I think everybody just mm-hmm. thinks that the federal trough is limitless, and why don't we in each state deserve our little share of the trough? And it's a nebulous sum that they don't really equate to their tax bill or to total spending. Is there any estimate of how much this is costing us as a country and as individuals, to kind of personalize it on some level to somehow bring it around to a popular movement to maybe light the fire under Congress? Because you're right. I mean,
and I'm just going to have to cut you off because I'm going to give Jody Schneider 30 seconds to answer that before we run out of time.
You can't put a dollar figure not easily on how much earmarks are costing, but it is certainly part of the reason that we have record deficits. And part of what's hard about controlling this is the deficit issue has not yet hit the popular imagination. When they do opinion polls, they do campaign polls, concern about deficits does not, it is not usually in the top five.
Bob, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. And our thanks as well to Jody Schneider, economics and finance editor at Congressional Quarterly, who was kind enough to join us here today in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
When we come back from a short break, the 17-page letter Iran's president sent to the White House, what does it and what does it not have to say? 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.